Thanks for tuning in. You're listening to the best animated shows ever, so far, with MC and Troy.
I'm Troy.
And I'm MC.
It's totally your turn.
Oh, it's my turn? And this is the best animated shows ever. So far. Where we watch, discuss, and rank every single animated show ever. Eventually.
Do you say the dot 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 in your head when you say the name of our title?
No.
I do every time. I'm like, the best animated shows ever. And then the little voice in my head goes, dot, dot, dot. And then I go, so far, every time. I'm so excited, MC, because we're talking about Batman.
Yes, I'm excited as well.
The Batman animated series is like one of my favorite cartoons. And I'm very, very excited to talk about it. It came out in 1992, lasted till 1995 with 85 episodes. This is the cartoon I remember watching when I was growing up. This is my Batman.
Yeah, this is my Batman as well. This is very much it repeated over and over during my pretty much from I'd say 7 or 8 up until I was like 15 or 16. This was on TV, and it would just keep like you would find it somewhere on TV.
Well, I'll tell you, part of the reason for that, the reason that it seems so ubiquitous, is that, am I using that big word correctly? That's a big word that I don't use.
I don't know.
Part of the reason you saw it all over the place is because the first season of this show was 65 episodes. And the reason for that is that that was the minimum episode count required for a show to be sold into syndication. So they like were like, all right, we're not sure if we're going to make this like super violent kids cartoon. But then they decided they were going to. And when they decided they were going to, they're like, okay, if we're going to make this cartoon, we're going to make sure it can go into syndication. So like from its first season, it was ready to be put into syndication, which basically means that it airs on a bunch of different networks. So
nice.
It was everywhere. We are going to be talking about these episodes based on the production order. They came out, the episodes aired in a really weird order. So like the first episode that actually aired was called The Cat and the Claw Part 1. And then part 2 of The Cat and the Claw didn't air until like 7 or 8 episodes later for some reason. And in the middle of that, there was another two-parter that aired like back to back. I don't know why they aired it the way that they did.
I like the production order because
I think that makes more sense.
Well, right off the bat, on Level Wings, which is the first episode ever, it involves Man-Bat. Which is for people who don't know, just a giant bat essentially.
He's a man that's a bat.
Yeah.
Not unlike the Batman. Yeah, I was reading about the decision to include Man-Bat in the first episode, and basically it was like, hey, we're gonna make a Batman cartoon. Let's get weird. Do you want to get weird with it? Let's get weird with it. And so they were like, we're gonna start with Man-Bat, of all things. But it's not time to talk about that, MC. I'm still talking about behind-the-scenes stuff. Come on, now.
Well,
jumping ahead.
I brought that up just so I could say the title of the episode.
Ah, that's fair. So this show came out in 1992, like I said. That was after both Batman and Batman Returns. So there's a lot of influence from Tim Burton's Batman aesthetic in this show. The gothic look of Gotham is kind of borrowed from Tim Burton's designs. And then expanded upon by the series creators, which were Eric Radomski and Bruce Timm. And I've seen some places giving credit to Radomski for the visual style of the show, including how dark everything is and the gothic architecture and everything. But most places seem to put most of that responsibility on Bruce Timm. Most resources basically say that, like, this is Bruce Timm's baby in terms of the visual style, which includes the dark appearance of everything. Do you know the story on why this show is so dark, how they achieved that look?
No, I have no idea. Like, when you watch it and stuff, I know it's dark, and like, all the characters are lit in this weird sort of, like, from underneath almost. Most of the characters look like they're lit. And all the background, all the light goes straight up. It doesn't spread out. It goes up and down. There's no, it's like, there's no, like, spread of the light. It's vertical.
Yeah. And really, like, harsh shadows every time there's shadows. Yeah. It's, oh, it's so good. So part of that's just design choice, but the way that they actually got the super dark appearance of everything is that they, at least at the start, some places I've read have said that they only did this for a little bit and then they switched, but at least at the start, they designed the show where all of the backgrounds were painted on black paper. So most cartoons and most everything, you start with a white canvas and you paint on top of that. And this show started with black and then painted lighter colors on top of black. So the base point, the starting point, was pitch black. And so, like, everything in the show has this really dark look to it because they started out by having a black page and then painted the lighter colors on top of that.
That makes a lot of sense.
It's really cool.
Yeah. It's
a very different style.
It's a very good aesthetic that they've created in this show.
Mm-hmm. And I love the character designs. That I've found pretty squarely is Bruce Timm's work, is all the character designs where everybody's kind of got this stylized look to them. And it's weird because it's like, I never know how to describe the character designs in this show because, like, there are aspects of the character designs that are realistic, but everybody is also so stylized that, like, you can tell in profile the difference between, like, Commissioner Gordon and Alfred and Bruce Wayne, and even Bruce Wayne and Batman look totally distinct from each other.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. It's just very cool designs.
And the way that he does the voice for Batman and then Bruce Wayne is, like, so different. And there's this great scene in this episode later on where he does the Bruce Wayne voice in the Batman suit.
And it's so weird.
And it was so weird to hear that voice coming out of Batman.
I'm so glad you noted that, because I have a note on that, too.
Yeah. my favorite character in this episode, is because he's so terrible, is Harvey Bullock, who I really enjoy in the Gotham series, who is like this... he's a completely different character in that series. Like, in this...
He's a good character.
Oh, yeah. So, in this series, he's kind of this corrupt cop that's... Oh, well, that gets exposed later on, I think.
Yeah, he's... The depths of his wrongdoings vary a little bit from episode to episode. Sometimes he's incompetent, sometimes he's, like, outright evil.
Yeah, but in this episode, he's just trying to catch Batman because they think he's robbing pharmaceutical companies.
Yeah, kind of doing his job.
Yeah.
Let's get into On Leather Wings. So the episode we're going into today, it's called On Leather Wings. It originally aired September 6th of 1992. It's written by Mitch Bryan and directed by Kevin Alateri, neither of whom jumped out at me as, particularly prolific creators on this show. It looks like, Kevin Alateri did a lot of, writing and directing, but, like, not a name that I knew at the start of this. But, let's get into On Leather Wings.
So pretty much we open with a police blimp, and it has a radar, and there's a few blips on the thing, and they kind of miss the thing that's flying around in the sky with it. You see shadows, and we end up at Phoenix Pharmaceuticals. and a guard gets thrown out the window. This is probably the best bit. The guard's walking around and he's recording himself doing voiceover work, essentially.
Yeah.
So
it's like, you too can be a popular radio personality, just like me.
What's great is he's a voice actor doing voice actor work in a show. It's so funny.
Voice actor who got hired to be on Batman to play a guard who is a voice actor.
Yeah, essentially.
Did you recognize the voices of one of the pilots of the blimp?
It sounded familiar, but I don't know who it is.
It's Batman.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, Kevin Conroy plays the guy in the blimp who's like, I got something. I was right there.
Yeah, the guy with the glasses, yeah.
Yep, it's absolutely the voice of Batman, just for some reason.
Fair enough.
It's very odd.
But yeah.
So our friend the voice actor guard gets chucked out a window, and we see a shadow, and like, right away, if you're watching this, you're like, that's not Batman's shadow.
No.
That is literally a bat that is a man. That is not Batman. That is a bat that's man.
And then it cuts to the mayor's office, and he's throwing down a paper, and Harvey Bullock is like, he's like,
well, the paper says police go to war with Batman.
Yeah. And Harvey's just like, oh, I just said a few things. And the Commissioner Gordon is like, I didn't give you permission to say anything.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this argument, and Harvey Bullock pleads the mayor to give him a task force to capture Batman.
Yep. And the mayor's like, well, you know, we do need to catch this guy, but Gordon's like trying to be more reserved on it. He wants to catch the Batman, but he's saying like, I'm not gonna have like an anti-vigilante SWAT team out on the roads, like, just let me handle this. And the mayor's kind of in a position now where, because of Bullock going and talking to the press, he's got it. I've been watching The Thick of It. Have you ever watched The Thick of It?
No.
The Thick of It is a show about British politics. And
I know what it is. It's essentially, there's this, like, he's essentially a bureaucrat, and he has to, like, deal with everyone's else's bullshit.
That character is played by Peter Capaldi, and it's great. But the person he's dealing with is like this. Like, lower end minister who's in charge of, I can't remember what, social services or something like that. But like, the first episode, the whole plot of the first episode is like, we're gonna do this thing because the prime minister said that's the kind of thing we should be doing, and that counts as approval, so we're gonna do it. So they announce to the press that they're gonna do it, and then Peter Capaldi finds out, and he's like, you dumbass, don't do that. And so then they have to call the press back and be like, okay, we're not doing that. But they've already scheduled a press conference, so they hold a press conference for something completely different, and then Peter Capaldi calls him back up and he goes, okay, so it turns out that the public opinion on that project that you were going to do is actually really good, so we're going to do it. So now you need to call up all the people who are at your press conference and tell them that you actually did announce that thing, even though you didn't. We're just going to pretend that you did and try to convince them that you did. And that's like, the whole show is just this series of like, don't do that, now do it, now don't do that, now do it.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what happens in the scene, is the mayor's like, all right, well, because you've said that we're going to do a task force, we're going to have to do a task force.
And then we get a coin flipping prosecutor.
The coin flip.
Who might be flipping a coin?
That's just District Attorney Harvey Dent.
Yeah.
Young hotshot flyboy District Attorney Harvey Dent.
Harvey Dent.
Pretty face flyboy Harvey Dent.
Yep. He's in the scene for like, you see him like flicking the coin, and then it cuts to him, and he's only a prosecutor at this point. He's not.
I think he's not district.
Yeah,
attorney
he's
yet.
Not district How attorney I? Yet. So he's like, if Detective Bullock is like, if we can prosecute, and he turns to Harvey Dent, and he's like, we'll get it done.
Yep, if you catch him, Harvey, I'll put him in jail for you.
Yep.
I read somewhere that Al Pacino was on their short list for Harvey Dent, and they didn't get him. Obviously, he turned him down, but he apparently was one of the potential actors for Harvey Dent.
That would have been really fun.
Super cool.
Yeah.
It's really neat to me that Harvey Dent's in here, because this is like this show is obviously like made very lovingly. As a Batman show, like, these people know Batman really well, and I think that both having Man-Bat as the villain of the first episode and also having Harvey Dent as a background character are both like ways that they show, like, hey, no, this is serious, we know what we're doing, this is like a real Batman show.
Yeah,
I like that a lot. So then we cut to the Batcave, where Batman's reading the newspaper and reading the headline of Gotham police declare war on Batman. And then Pennyworth comes in, Alfred's there, and he's just like throwing some shade right away.
Oh yeah,
just like immediately is like, I see you've been making friends, sir.
Essentially Batman's investigating the pharmaceutical company break-ins. There's been three or something, and he's like, oh, I've got to get to Phoenix Labs to investigate, and Alfred's makes fun of him again and being like, oh, I should cancel that date with, what was it, Bambi?
I should cancel Master Bruce's date. I like that he refers to Bruce as a separate entity.
Yeah.
Another cool thing in this scene is Batman makes a joke, because Alfred says something about, like, it wasn't you throwing the guard out the window last night. And he goes, I only toss butlers, Alfred.
Yeah.
And I'm like, ah, this Batman makes jokes. Like, after, you know, with the past, what, six movies that Batman has been in, like, I kind of forgot that Batman can make jokes.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
That's a thing he can do.
He doesn't always have to be dark and grim. There is some...
He doesn't always have to be like this.
Yeah.
Ow, that hurt my throat. So he jumps to the Batmobile.
Yeah.
And I have a note. If I could, I'd like to do for you a dramatic reading.
Okay.
Of my notes. It says, the Batmobile, the music, this show.
I totally get those notes, because, oh my god, I love this Batmobile.
It's so good. It's ridiculous.
It's
very impractical.
It's kind of like the Tim Burton the Batmobile, but at the same time it's sleeker and more aerodynamic. There's less points and like frill to it. It's very
It's also like
nice.
83 feet long.
Yeah. It's massive. But
it looks
so cool and armored as well.
I have a distinct memory of a chase scene in this show, not in this episode, but in the show in general, where the Batmobile, in order just to make a turn, it has to fire a grappling hook out the side and latch onto
scene that you're talking about.
And it's like, yeah, it would have to, because it's freaking enormous. I think that's from the episode where the Batmobile gets all beat up. There's an episode of this show, MC, where they will make you emotional about the well-being of the Batmobile, because you're like, oh no, the Batmobile's broken. That's so sad. And I take it to a mechanic, because he's got a specific mechanic that's like his secret Batmobile mechanic. This is a good show.
Yeah.
This is a good show. So he goes to the pharmaceutical company, and he's got to sneak in. He grappling hooks his way in there, which, again... It just makes me happy that he just, like, right off the bat, pulls out a grappling hook. Like, it's no thing.
What's really weird...
It's what Batman does.
...is that in the middle of the night, there's two people in lab coats walking around this pharmaceutical company, and they just happen to spot Batman grappling...
Well, they're about to do it.
I mean, yeah, so you think they might be a bit distracted. How did they notice Batman grappling hooking into a building late at night?
Because they saw his shadow. Because Gotham has very stark shadows.
Silly. But essentially, they're like, we should call the cops. And Batman gasses the guard that's sitting outside of the room they got broken into.
Also, though, I wasn't joking when I said they about to do it.
Yeah.
These two scientists were about to do it. This show, like, has a lot of violence for a kids' show. It has real guns. It has real guns being fired at the protagonist, which is pretty rare for a kids' show. But it also has, like, hey, those two scientists about to do it, which is, like, a weird thing to put in a kids' show. There was apparently an episode that never got produced that was all about Batman's sexuality. Like, there was going to be a sex episode of the Batman animated series.
Well, I mean, he is a billionaire playboy.
Billionaire playboy philanthropist. I can never say that, all those words together. Hey, do you know what one of my favorite jokes from... one of my favorite jokes from Gotham is Gordon and Bullock have, like, chased a criminal down, and they've, like, got him knocked down on the floor, and they're, like, interrogating about, like, who is he? And he's like, oh, he's this philanthropist, blah, 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 blah. They're like, where is he? Or Gordon says, where is he? And he's like, oh, he's gonna be over here. And then Bullock goes, what's philanthropy? It makes me so happy. Bullock is such a doofus, and I love him. I love him in this show, but I love him even more in Gotham.
Gotham?
And he honestly,
is the best in Gotham.
Talking about how this show proves that it, like, it knows what it's doing, it knows how to be a good Batman show, I think Gotham proves that by having Bullock be the other character. Like, right away, if you grew up with the animated series, and then you put on Gotham, and they introduce Harvey Bullock, you're like, all right, yeah, let's do this.
Well, that's something that they don't sort of address, is that Harvey and Gordon were supposed to be partners early on in their career. And Bullock is... he looks kind of younger than Gordon in this, but they're supposed to be only like 5 or 6 years apart.
Well, I wasn't sure in the mythos of this show if they were ever actually partners or not. Mm. I mean, it's... it's DC. Their continuity's all over the place. Yeah. So, man, have you seen the stuff for that new show that they're doing, the spinoff of Gotham called Pennyworth?
No.
They're making, like, a World War II era spy show about Alfred's dad. I don't think it's even about Alfred himself.
Okay.
And I'm just like, you know what? I don't think I need that one. Like, even if it's good, like...
If it was... that version of Alfred, like a young version of the SAS Alfred, I might want to watch that show.
I can't remember, but I feel like it's supposed to be World War II, and that guy's not nearly old enough to have been in World War II.
No.
Although, I guess Gotham does take place in the weird nebulous timeline that most Batman stuff takes place in, where, like, you don't actually really know what year it is, so... I don't know. That seems like a stretch.
And all the technology seems to be from the 80s or something.
Mostly, yeah.
Except for they have mobile phones.
Yeah, but they're like crummy mobile phones. Yeah. So then the police show up.
Yep. While Batman's investigating. He finds a... the tape recorder and a bit of hair, essentially, and he takes the evidence, and then
it's like a full on SWAT team that shows up and busts through the doors and starts, like, firing tear gas at him and stuff, and Gordon shows up and is like, Bullock, dang it, I told you not to do this. We got to do this tactfully, not with a freaking army.
And the best bit is, he's like, you got the wrong suspect, because there's been another break-in in a pharmaceutical company across town. And he's like, but the Batman's in there. And then the building blows up after Batman takes out some of the SWAT team.
Yeah, because, like, one of them shoots, like, a tear gas grenade, but it lands next to some explosive chemicals or something, so Batman... has to save one of the police officers. So not only does Batman escape, but he escapes and saves one of the cops that was, like, sent there to capture him. Because Batman's a good dude. Next we go to Bruce Wayne picking up the investigation.
Yeah.
Where he's using his contacts as a millionaire playboy philanthropist. Billionaire playboy philanthropist? At this point, he was probably just a millionaire playboy philanthropist.
I mean, I'm not sure.
He might have, like, had a billion, but not, like, multiple billions, right? This is 1992.
I'm not sure.
Hey, who's got more money, Bruce Wayne or Tony Stark?
Tony Stark, for sure.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Who has more money, Batman or Iron Man? I'll go with that version. The five richest superheroes from Money.com. Number five, Emma Frost. Net worth of $1 to $3 billion. Wow. Good going, Emma. Then Charles Xavier with 3.5. Bruce Wayne is number three at 9.2. Oh, I know who number one's going to be. Yeah, okay. Tony Stark is number two with $12.4 billion. And then who's the richest superhero, MC? Who could be the richest superhero?
I'm drawing a blank.
T'Challa, my dude.
Oh, right.
He's
yes.
the freaking king.
Yeah, he's the king of a whole country that has mm-hmm. vibranium. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
According to the comics, vibranium costs $10,000 per gram. And Wakanda has 10,000 tons of the stuff.
Yeah.
A little math and that amount of vibranium would cost more than the GDP of the entire world. So his net worth, according to this article, is $90.7 trillion.
Yeah, that's a lot of money.
That's a lot of money.
But I was correct.
Yeah, Tony Stark beats out Bruce Wayne.
Yeah,
it's all those military contracts.
Yeah.
So Bruce Wayne goes to the zoo. He does. That's not. It's,
right. He goes to the zoo and he hands over the samples and the recording to three scientists,
saying that he's got a bat infestation in the house and he thinks they're in the chimney.
Dr. Mulch,
Dr. March, and the Langstroms, Kirk and Francine.
Francine is the daughter to Dr. March.
Mm-hmm.
And she's married to
Kirk.
Kirk.
Yep.
And essentially, I think it then cuts back to the Batcave almost immediately. And he's giving him the report. Yeah. This is the scene where we get Bruce Wayne's voice coming out of the Batman.
But first, he's listening to the bat sounds. He's listening to the bat sounds on the computer, and it's like... Alfred comes in and goes, "I didn't realize you'd taken up listening to rock and roll, sir."
Which is really weird, because it doesn't sound like rock and roll. If anything, it sounds like death metal.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that'd be some bad death metal. It doesn't sound like music.
No. It's a lot of guttural growling and high-pitched noises, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. So he gets onto the phone with Dr. March from the zoo. And this is where, like you said, he's in the Batcave. He's in the Batman costume. But Dr. March isn't calling to talk to Batman. He's calling to talk to Bruce Wayne. And so Batman does Bruce Wayne, and I hate it. I hate it so much.
And you know what this really drives a point across?
Mm-hmm.
Batman isn't the mask. Bruce Wayne's his mask.
Yes, absolutely. That is very true in this show, that Batman is the real character. Bruce Wayne is just pretend. So the doc tells him that the sounds are in fact two noises mixed together. It's starlings and brown bats fighting over a nest in his chimney.
It's common brown bats is the fur that he found.
Yep.
But we and already Bruce Wayne's know like, that's
oh cool, thanks, that's super helpful. He's lying to me, Alfred. I have to find out why.
Yeah, essentially that's, and it's like, they've already done all the analysis, and you're thinking, well, then why did he go to the zoo if he already right. had all the analysis?
And he, because he wanted to find someone, he was hoping they would lie to him, because that gives him a lead. Good job, Batman.
And then, essentially, from this scene in the Batcave, we see a scientist burning the evidence Bruce Wayne uh-huh. handed over. And I think we're supposed to imply that it might be March, but really, the guy's too tall. Like, March is all slumped over and, like, old-looking.
Well, he just shapeshifted. I should have set up that joke better. Did you recognize who the voice of Dr. March was?
No.
It's René Auberginois, the actor who plays Odo in Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
Oh!
So you see, he just shapeshifted.
It's Odo. Okay, yeah.
That was dumb.
I should have recognized his voice. He does some of the Odo noises. Yeah.
It's just common brown bats.
We love Deep Space Nine.
It's very good. Oh my gosh, MC. So my wife and I have been watching Deep Space Nine for 2 years, and we are so close to the end. I was like, hey, darling wife, you don't like spoilers. And I can't remember specifically in regards to part one. Is it that you get upset when you see that part one is in the title, or you get upset if it's part one, but you don't realize that it's part one? And she's like, no, I want to know if it's part one. And I was like, cool. We have 10 episodes left in this show. The next episode is part one. And she's like, of a two-parter? And I was like, no, of a 10-parter. Because this show ends on a 10-part episode, which mind-blowing. It's amazing.
Oh, so that last arc is just... Dude, and how it ends.
It's so intense. I'm so excited. We have not started part one yet, but that, like, I'm so excited. Ah, such a good show.
Yeah.
But that's not the show we're talking about today.
No.
Where's the big list? I'm putting Star Trek the Animated Series on the big list.
I think you already have.
I'm putting it on there again. It is not on our notes.
I thought of one, but I can't remember it right now.
Star Trek the Animated Series. It's on the list now. So the guy's burning the evidence.
Yep, and... then there's an ad break that isn't actually in the thing that I'm watching. It just cuts to black, and it's on the brown bat that they have in the cage.
Right.
And then when it fades back in, there's some guy, and you see the back of him, and then it cuts to his hands in red gloves messing around with Phoenix pharmaceutical products.
Yeah, trying to open the bottle, and he's like all muttering to himself, like, ugh, it's too much. I can't get rid of it. And then he just chugs some pills or something. Like, and dude, don't measure your medicine, my dude.
Yeah, and it's clearly Kurt at this point. Even though Kirk. It's still, yeah, Kirk. It's still a silhouette, but it's like, oh, that's clearly the young guy.
Yeah.
And then Batman rocks up.
Yeah. Batman's like, hey, what's up? Are you the man bat?
Yeah, essentially that's... He's like interrogating him, and it's like... he's like, he's off giving a lecture about the evolution of bat and the downfall of man. And mm-hmm. I found a way to combine DNA... of bats into humankind, so I'm the best of both worlds, but it's taking over. And
this guy really goes into like a villain monologue with very little prompting. Like,
yeah,
I genuinely don't know if Batman realized that Kirk was Man-Bat at this time. I think he thought it was Dr. March.
Yeah,
and Kirk is like, aha, I am actually the Man-Bat, and Batman's like, oh yeah, I knew that.
And he's describing how the beast bat thing it discovered all the chemicals it needed because it's actually inside him, and
right.
he knows everything that it needs to complete this transformation. And then
it's definitely described as like a distinct creature inside of him. Like yeah. when he transforms into Man-Bats, I mean, it's a very Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde. Like something else is in control. It's not Kirk at that point.
But what he's holding the pharmaceutical in the bottle or whatever, and rather than drinking it, he crushes it in his hand and then shifts into Man-Bat.
Well, remember, he already drank a bunch of it. So I think the transformation was just like it takes a few minutes for his system to process the chemical. I don't think it was the breaking of the bottle that triggered it. I think because he was starting to transform, he was like, "Aha, I've delayed long enough." No, that's I don't remember what this guy's voice is, but basically he's like, "I've delayed yeah. long enough that now my transformation is complete."
And
this guy must go through so many lab coats. Because when he turns into Man-Bat, he gets all big and rips his lab coat.
He just rips out of the top half of his outfit, like, and mm-hmm. his shoes, but he still has pants on.
Well, it's the Hulk syndrome, right? Like, when yeah. you transform into a creature, a horrible abomination, all of your clothes get destroyed except your pants.
What I find really funny in this scene is, as soon as Man-Bat has Batman pinned under a table, Kirk's wife walks in. What's her name again?
Francine.
Francine walks in, and she's all horrified at seeing Man-Bat, and he takes off because he's kind of ashamed, I think.
Yeah. Well, I think Francine and Marsh both knew about it, but I think they thought... I mean, it's kind of an addiction story, right? Like, I think they both knew that he had a problem, but thought that he was... working to control it, and instead he's like reveling in being Man-Bat.
Kind of, but he also makes it out like Man-Bat's the one who's done a lot of the planning as well.
Mm-hmm. That's true. He's I mean, he's conflicted about it. Like, does think bats are pretty cool. He's very pro-bat. I think he started out being like, this is so cool, I can turn into, like, a bat creature. But then the Man-Bat started hurting people, and now he's like, aw, man, maybe this isn't so cool. And then takes Batman on a chase.
Oh, yeah. He no, it's not really a chase, because Batman sort of lashes himself to Man-Bat.
It's like a chase with cheat codes. Like,
yeah. Batman's attached himself to this flying creature, and it proceeds to fly him through the city
mm-hmm.
of Gotham, and
at one point going under a police blimp.
Oh yeah, we get a scene with the police blimp again, and he's like, "Oh, there's a few blips on the thing again," and his partner's like, "Oh, not this again," and then bloody Man-Bat flies past and Batman hits their windscreen. Oh, it's great.
I like the vindication for a young cop in the blimp. To be like, yeah. See, I told you. They go all over the place. This is really well animated. It's a super like fluid action scene of them flying all over the place.
I love how
go ahead.
So Man-Bat is flying, and it's like he looks back, and but really what makes this scene is like this tethered Batman
mm-hmm.
and how he's swirling through the air and his cape and everything. It just makes the scene.
I was listening to a thing a while ago that was talking about superhero costumes and why they're all so similar. And one of the things that it talked about was capes and the reason that superheroes have capes. And the reason that, like, every superhero in a certain period had a cape was because they were only going to be portrayed in comics, in still images. And the cape let you show movement really well. So if, you know, if you're trying to draw Superman flying down from the sky and landing, the way he lands, he kind of just looks like he's standing there. But if you have his yeah. cape streaming straight up behind him, you're like, oh, he just came from up above and came down. And
yeah.
And while this isn't a still image, I feel like the cape really accomplishes the same thing in this scene because, yeah, a lot of the, like, speed and sharp turns and stuff from this scene are illustrated best by seeing the cape swing around as he's being pulled along. I think it's really cool.
Yeah.
It's a good use of the character design.
And then, because the police have called in for a helicopter, Bullock's at the helicopter trying to get his way onto the helicopter, and he's like, you have to wait for Commissioner Gordon. And essentially there's another back and forth between Commissioner Gordon and Harvey, and it ends with the commissioner, with Gordon getting into the helicopter and starting to fly away, and Bullock jumping into the helicopter and scrambling in.
Yeah. That's dangerous. That's dangerous, Harvey. And you're not in the best of shape. Don't do that.
Yeah, Harvey, you're not a fit young guy. You're definitely a little overweight, and maybe you shouldn't be trying to jump into a helicopter that's risen 3 to 5 feet off the ground.
You know, one of the shots that people love in Captain America Civil War is the scene where Steve is on the edge of that helipad, and Bucky's in the helicopter trying to take off, and Steve's got one arm holding onto the edge of the helipad and the other arm holding onto the helicopter, and it's basically just an excuse for Chris Evans to just flex really hard at the camera, which is, I think, why people like that scene so much. But before that, before he's grabbed onto the edge of the helipad, he's just standing on the helipad and holding on to the runner of the helicopter, and somehow is holding the helicopter down. And that's not how physics work, because I don't care how strong he is, he doesn't have anything to put, like, to hold on to on the other side. It's just his weight. His weight wouldn't hold down. It makes me so mad. I'm like, you can't hold down a helicopter with strength unless you're holding on to something.
I mean, depends on how much thrust there is.
Okay, I'm gonna go to YouTube. I'm gonna send you a clip. YouTube, Steve holds a helicopter.
I know you're right, technically.
We're gonna watch it together, MC, because this is unacceptable to me. You tell me when it's time to hit play.
Hit play.
Okay, there's Bucky. He rips the tether off and climbs in the helicopter. Oh, he looks so mad. Poor Bucky. He's so misunderstood. Look, it's Captain Rogers.
Yep.
He comes running up. The helicopter's about 10 feet in the air. What's he doing? What's happening now, MC?
Yeah, that's... I mean...
He pulls it back down.
Well, I mean, you did see it rock and stuff.
Okay, but shut up now, because now here's the shot.
Yeah.
Oh, flex at the camera, Chris Evans. I think they just put that in there because they're like, we need one more shot where Captain America just flexes real good. Can we just figure out a way to have him flex real good in this one? And then he almost gets killed by a helicopter.
I mean, yeah.
Just like Man-Bat and Batman almost get killed by a helicopter when they almost fly into Gordon and Bullock's helicopter as they're flying.
Oh, yeah. But they don't, and,
Batman ends up basically catching up to Man-Bat and just punches him out.
Yeah, no, he's, like, punching him in the back of the head, and then he covers up his eyes, and he makes him fly into the side of a building or a billboard. And that makes Man-Bat fall unconscious. But...
And then the helicopter shows up. Like, the helicopter finds them and is about to, like, arrest them. And Batman escapes with Man-Bat. He doesn't turn him over to the police.
Nope. And he goes back to the Batcave and he's like...
Two for dinner tonight, sir. Because he's like, oh, you've brought a guest home for dinner.
Yeah, and Batman's all, I think I can make a formula that can turn him back into himself.
Yeah.
And he does so. And everything ends all cheery.
Except,
at this point.
Except it doesn't. Okay, so here's what happens. Because I wrote this down because I was upset by it. He's like, all right, I'm going to undo what happened. And then he takes him back to Francine. And Francine's like, oh my gosh, is he okay? Will he change back ever again? And Batman goes, no. The formula is out of his system. And you're like, ah, good. What a happy ending. And he goes, it's over. And you're like, that's so good to hear, Batman. And then he, like, turns straight to the camera and says, for now. And he says it just like that. And I'm like, whoa, Batman, that's not a good ending. You're like, you're definitely going to be safe forever, except for when you're not.
Yeah, except for when he starts taking the addictive Man-Bat potion again.
Yeah, let's get this dude into some therapy, maybe group sessions. Like, come on now. This is not the end of things. Did you play through the Man-Bat stuff in Arkham City?
Bits and pieces of it.
I love Man-Bat because of this episode. And I did not expect Man-Bat to be in Arkham City. And for anyone who hasn't played Arkham City, the way Man-Bat shows up is, I think you get a couple teases of him early on where, like, you see something in the distance flying and you're like, what was that? Or, like, maybe you hear, like, on the police scanner. But then... Go ahead.
There's a few instances of, like, you're flying through the city and you hear transmissions and stuff.
I think that's what it starts with.
You can tap into police channels and whatnot. And every now and then you might see something flying off, like, way off.
Mm-hmm.
Like, as you're swinging through the city, you'll catch a glimpse of something flying elsewhere. And you're like, huh, what's that?
But the way you swing through the city in this game is you grappling hook. And the way Batman does that is you, like, grappling hook up to the top of a building. So your grappling hook shoots out. It hooks to the top of the building, and then you zip up to it. And it's, like, this cool thing where, like, the camera zooms in behind you as you go up and stuff. And then you fly off the top of the edge and start gliding. And then sometimes, just randomly, you'll do that, and you'll grappling hook up, and a camera zooms in behind you, and you're zooming up to the top of the building, and you're ready for it to be like, here we go, we're gonna fly over the top of it, and then Man-Bat jumps out at you from the top of the building and, like, grabs onto Batman, and it's freaking terrifying. It scared the crap out of me the first time that happened.
And you gotta do those quick time button mashes.
Yep, takes you to a quick time event to fight him. But then it's a similar plot where, like, you know, you find out what's ailing him and figure out a cure and stuff like that. But I had to get that mentioned in there because that's, like, one of my favorite moments from a video game, period, is the first time that Man-Bat popped out at me because it scared me so bad. It's very good. That's all I got, man.
Yeah, no, I don't have anything to add. I like Arkham City. I think about 30 hours in.
Mm. It's a long game.
Before I stopped. Yeah. No, I just couldn't do it all. Every now and then, because I have it on the 360, I'll pop my 360 on and I'll just play a little bit, but...
Wait. Really? Is it Arkham City he's in? Or no, it's Arkham Knight.
Arkham Knight?
Yeah. I think. Which game has Man-Bat?
Arkham Knight. The only one... Arkham Knight? The one that I don't have is Arkham Asylum, which is the first one.
Have you ever played Arkham Asylum?
I played bits and pieces.
You should play Arkham Asylum. It's very good. Arkham Asylum kind of plays more like an Ocarina of Time era Zelda game. Like, it's kind of confined. It's open world, but not nearly the same way that Arkham City and Arkham Knight are.
You gotta, like, unlock areas.
Yeah, very, very, like, I guess maybe Metroidvania would be a better descriptor than Zelda. But it has dungeons is why I think of Zelda. Because, like, you go and you're like, all right, Poison Ivy is over in that building over there. And if I get through that building, then I can get my grappling hook. So then you, like, go into a Poison Ivy dungeon, basically. Where it's like you're going to spend an hour and a half working through this area to get to a boss fight, and then when you beat the boss, you get your grappling hook, and now you can go to the next area. Which Arkham City and Knight did a little bit, but Arkham Asylum, I think, was the most kind of focused version of that, because the other two focus more on open world stuff.
Yeah, really, for me, Arkham City and Knight, I ended up going around and just trying to, like, level up.
Mm-hmm.
And not really focusing on story stuff. So I could, like, swing into, like, gangs and just beat the crap out of them.
Yeah.
As Batman. Because that's my favorite thing to do in those games. It's just so to good. Swing in or fly in and dropkick someone and then just beat up everyone without getting hit.
It's very good. Those games are super fun. I picked it up again because I never played through the DLC for Arkham Knight, so I've kind of been working my way through through some of that. But they're fun games, and this is a fun show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I really like Batman as a character,
mm-hmm.
because of his flaws, and I think showing, like, in Gotham, they show, like, how a lot of those things form and where all that stuff is coming from. Especially, like, I don't know if it was the last season of Gotham or the one before, where it's like, oh yeah, he's pretending to be a playboy even though he's, like, doing all this detective stuff.
Oh, really? See, I dropped off Gotham a couple seasons back, so it's one I would really like to finish up now that I know it's ended, I guess, now. I would like to finish it because I really liked Gotham a lot, but I never finished it. I have seen, though, every episode of the Batman animated series, including the one we'll talk about next week, which is Christmas with the Joker. The Joker's here.
Yeah, and it's my favorite Joker.
So tune in next time on the best anime show. We don't say that at the end of our show. Okay, bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the best animated shows ever so far. Find the show on Twitter at BaseSFcast or email us at BaseSFcast@gmail.com. That's BaseSFcast. Our intro music is Funnin' and Sunnin', and our outro music is Motivator, both by Kevin MacLeod at incompetech.com, and licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0 license. Thanks again for listening, and tune in next time.
This has been a presentation
of the We Can Make This Work
Probably Network.
Follow us on Twitter
at Probably Work
for more of our questionable content.
Also, we have a website called probablywork.com.
Hi, I'm Evan, and I sure enjoy me some podcasts.
Wow,
this podcast sure is enjoyable.
But sometimes life has a little bit more pegged on for you than what you thought.
Oh man, is that a missile?
I'm okay.
ThoughtsCast, part of the We Can Make This Work Probably Podcast Network.